Hi, this is Ann Wilson in the studio for my solo album, Hope and Glory.
Hello.
Hey, Annie, it's Redbeard.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
It's wonderful to get together with you again. I appreciate the time to do this.
Well, you know, I just have always been of a mind that if I was going to put out a solo album, it should be something really, really with a lot of intent behind it, not just because I could, you know. I wanted to wait until I got the right idea, you know, behind it, found the right producer, was just all worked up, excited about doing it. And I've always been a team player in heart, you know, so I've always sort of had my hands full with that. I just decided at this particular time that, well, the time's right, you know.
What is the concept here for Hope and Glory? You mentioned a moment ago the right idea. What is the idea?
Well, all these songs on this album are songs of conscience. And they all, you could stand them around in a room and the things they say all really go together well and they make a powerful statement as a group. There's not a bunch of love songs on this album. This is more an album that has something to say about what's going on in the world right now. And lots of the songs were chosen at other very scary times in our history because they resonate into the now and were written by some amazing people like Bob Dylan and John Lennon and a few others who were true poets and visionaries. And so I just really wanted to find songs that that people can listen to and find power in. Mm-hmm,
When the album starts, I was immediately startled to hear you singing what we know as David Gilmour's lines in Goodbye Blue Sky. How did you choose this to cover, and why did you pick it to open Hope and Glory?
We chose it to open the album because it's it is a very pure version of what our vision is for this album. It's a World War II nightmare scenario, but it's very pure, you know, so it's kind of ironic in that way. And, you know, who better than Roger Waters, that old kooky cut-up, you know, Roger Waters, to present irony.
Goodbye.
I just love that song. I always have. And all these songs, you know, I chose because I was thrilled to be able to get to sing them as a singer because I grew up with them. And I think that the lyrics, I'm a word person, you know, that's my whole thing. So I was just really, really thrilled to get to sing these words.
It was a real eye opener. And then it tracks in the next song. Oh, man, it just blows me away. How did you choose Elton John and Bernie Taupin's Where to Now, St. Peter? For that matter, how did you even begin to choose any Elton Bernie song to cover?
That was hard, you know, because there are so many amazing Bernie Taupin lyrics, you know. This one in particular, of course, you know, anyone who knows Bernie Taupin knows that he wrote a lot of songs about the American Civil War, and because he's an Americanophile. And this one in particular I liked because it's haunting, it's mysterious, it's through the words of a soldier who wakes up to find himself dead and floating down a river and talking to St. Peter. And yet there's something really inspirational about it, but it's still very mysterious. And I love, of course, the whole musical part of it with Elton. It was so great to get to go and work with him, you know, and have there be a moment where his piano was backing up my voice, you know, for instance. Can you imagine?
No, I can't. That's why I'm talking to you about this. I want to know everything about it.
You want details. Yeah, well.
Dish, sweetie, dish.
Yeah, oh, well, he was so generous with us. I mean, he came in the middle of the day after having done the Red Piano show in Las Vegas the night before. He was going to do the same show that night. And in the middle of his day when he was, you know, could have been relaxing around the pool or playing tennis or something, he came and worked with us. And he banged out this song of his that he hadn't really played for about 30 years. And it took a time or two before he kind of remembered it and got comfortable with it again. But once he did, oh, man, he kicked it up so far that we had to go back and re-record our track, you know, around his energy. And I had to re-record my vocal because he just sang this really aggressive thing that really, really, really toughed it up a lot. So it was an eye-opener for me.
Myself a blue canoe, and I floated like a leaf, dazzling, dancing, half enchanted in my mind. Feeling restless were my eyes, insane they took the paddles, my arms the paralyzed. So where to now, St. Peter? If it's true, I'm in your hands. I may not be I understand I'm on the road where all the wise is
sweet young foreign gun, and this lazy life is short.
Something or nothing always ending with our
some of the most prodigious pipes in all of rock and roll. How intimidating to even the most intrepid singer is Sir Elton when he, I mean, he can really sing.
Oh, I know, I know. And he's got so much muscle behind it and so much soul behind it, just the right combination. That, it's intimidating, all right, especially since he's got so much experience. I mean, talk about experience, years. It's just, I don't know. It was just one of the most, I guess, precious moments of work that I've ever been able to do. It was just really, I'll never forget it.
And the coolest thing is, and because of Hope and Glory, now we all get to share in it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to sit about 15 feet from Elton John at the Morton Meyerson Concert Symphony Hall here in Dallas with just him and his piano for about 90 minutes. And it was one of the best nights of my life.
Oh, I love it when he does that, when it's just him and the piano. That's just so thrilling.
It was something else.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was just marvelous.
Yeah, he came to Seattle one year, and he was doing that, and he did that song, Ticking.
Ah.
It was right after the whole Columbine thing had happened, and that's what Ticking is about. It's just about someone who just snaps, you know, and it's just so powerful. And, you know, tears were rolling down my face while I was listening. And I just could not control it. It was just too much for me. Mm. So beautiful.
Mm. Now, Ben Mink will probably win a Grammy for the production on this track alone. It is absolutely stunning. Those sweeping synth strings give me goosebumps every time I listen.
And the whole drone thing was a really, really, you know, very good idea.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, he is a very mental guy, as you can imagine, Ben Mink is, and he really tore his hair out over this one. He worried and, you know, and wrung his hands about getting it right, and, you know, he didn't want to let Elton down. He wanted to really give respect to the song, and He finally arrived at it. It was really something to watch.
Well, just for this song alone, I'm a voting member in NARIS, so believe me, I'm voting at I'm voting at Grammy time. This is stunning. It's just stunning. Elton and Bernie told me that one of their biggest disappointments as songwriters has been that so few singers have covered their songs over the years. Why do you think that is?
Wow, that's a good question. You'd think everybody would be covering them all the time. But, you know, Elton's melodies aren't the easiest thing in the world to sing. I mean, because, you know, consider for a moment the level that he sings on. It's easy for him to just, you know, peel off those licks, but you really have to be proficient in your sort of gospel abilities at singing. And a lot of people find Bernie's lyrics, challenging because there's really a lot to them. They're really poetic and really clever. And I think a lot of people would rather just sort of screw off a little, you know, and do acrobatics.
A moon, June, spoon kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. You have to think when you sing those guys' music. You really do. Hi, this is Ann Wilson in the studio for my solo album, Hope and Glory.
And then on We Gotta Get Out of This Place, two initial observations, if I may. This is possibly the first time in rock history where the solo artist graciously gave the opening verses to their guest vocalist.
Yes.
And you sound like you had a ball recording this.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Who is this?
Well, that's Wynonna. That's Wynonna Judd. And she just has that cool lower register, that real sort of, you know, Elvis-y thing she does down low. And I thought, oh, man, who better to sing that opening line, you know, in this dirty old part of the city. So you know, I thought she should start it out. No one's going to get confused. They'll know it's, you know, my solo album. And yeah, we did have fun. We had a blast. She was in the middle of her day as a mother, and she blew in, you know, and just had all this stuff, you know, calling the kids on the cell phone, and then finally we got into it, and she relaxed, and she's hilarious. And it was the most fun 3 hours in the world, I tell you what.
You guys sound like you had a ball. And you've got a great sense of humor, too. You've always been a lot of fun in my experience, too. So you two must have just cut up like crazy. I hope you videotaped it.
Well, actually, you know, we did not, because nobody was wearing makeup. Nobody had their hair done. we were just kind of slopping around. It was the day after the CMAs, and we were loose, you know. We were just kind of all dusty, and we had a film on us. So we just sang that day.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. My little girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, you'll be dead before your time is due. Yes, I know. What's my daddy in bed? He's dying. Watch his head. you're so young and pretty. And one thing I know is true.
Darkness, Darkness. Now, back in 1970, an album came out called Elephant Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
By the Youngbloods. Where were you in 1970 when Elephant Mountain came out? What were you doing when you first heard Darkness, Darkness?
Well, when I first heard Darkness, Darkness, and in fact, the album Elephant Mountain, I was living in Bellevue, Washington, still mooching off my parents, living in their house. Not exactly following their rules, but keeping it secret and listening to music constantly and going out at night and partying and then sneaking in, that type of thing. And so Darkness, Darkness, like I thought was the most exotic gypsy thing I had ever heard at that time, especially because of the fiddle, right? But then you go farther and you listen to the words, and that was at a time when darkness could still possibly be your friend.
Mm.
We hadn't known Layne Staley yet. We hadn't seen people go crashing into the abyss yet, necessarily, in that way. It was still all about a young girl who might be kind of depressed one night, but if she can talk to herself, then she can figure out that the next day is going to come. And that's how I heard Darkness, Darkness. You know, I didn't think about death or murder or hard times. I was more about, let's get through this, you know, let's get through this scary time. That's why it's on this album, because I'm trying to say things to people about the fear of our times and the hardships.
Wow. So when you first heard Darkness, Darkness, I mean, it preceded even like the White Heart days, right?
Yeah, I wasn't in a band.
You weren't even in a band.
No, I was still playing acoustic guitars with Nancy in a folk group we had called The Viewpoints.
Wow.
And we were playing like at the local drive-in theater before the show started, and you know, down by the down by where they sell the hot dogs and stuff.
Wow.
Or we were playing youth Sundays at our parents' church or things like that, you know.
Sleep in the cool. shadow in the silence of your deep darkness, darkness. Hide my yearning for the things I cannot be. Keep my mind from constant turning toward the things I cannot see now. Things I cannot see. Darkness, darkness, long and lonesome. Easy day that brings me pain. I have felt the edge of sadness. I've known the depth of fear. Darkness, darkness, be my blanket. Cover me.
The Youngbloods got their producer to play that opening fiddle on Darkness, Darkness. His name was listed as Charles E. Daniels. He got pretty famous. A few years later with that fiddle. To calling him Charlie. Now the young.
So these songs go way back with me, you know.
Of course.
They go way, way back. And it's such an amazing thing to like bring them up to date in a way, and to get to put my muscle to them.
There were you and I talked about this in previous interviews, but I think it's pertinent now because this music comes from when you first heard it. It's rooted in that time. You were conflicted about a war then, so much so that you and Your boyfriend actually left the country because of war then, didn't you?
That's right, yeah. It was it was the Vietnam War, and it was a dirty war, a dirty little lying war, as they all are. And in my particular case, you know, I come from a family whose father was a Marine officer and had already been to two wars and been wounded and had a lot of post-traumatic stress problems, and it was right in front of our family's face, what happens to men in war. So it was not that much of a stretch for me to just say, well, I'm not going there again. And that's why I went up to Canada with my boyfriend of the time, and we chose to go up there and live a life that some people might say was giving up or hiding, but we thought of it as conscientiously not taking part in a killing spree, in a bloodbath that we didn't feel for or agree with. And there were a bunch of us up there. There were a bunch of Americans up there. You should have seen it in 1972 or 3. It was so many Americans.
And to be fair, you were 18. You didn't have the resources that you might have available to you. You know, at this point in your life, your options were pretty limited at that time, right?
Oh, absolutely. No money.
Yeah. So there wasn't a whole
no
lot.
Real.
Go ahead.
No options. I mean, you have your big strong ideals at that age, and those are really important to you at that age, or any age, hopefully. I guess you could still call me an idealist.
I noticed that Jesse Colin Young is the only songwriter you covered twice on Hope and Glory. Was that consciously or just a coincidence?
That was a coincidence. Of course, I loved Jesse Colin Young. I thought his voice was an amazing instrument, very pure and almost like an Irish tenor, you know, like that Celtic sound to
it.
But
very good.
But as a songwriter, I just chose these two songs because of the content of the songs. And when we were going to do Get Together, you know, we kind of stopped for a minute and went, well, that might be really inviting scrutiny, because that was the hippie anthem, you know. There was a time when people were trying to get it to be the American national anthem and stuff. There was like 10 seconds when they were really high when they wanted that. But no, we just thought, God, this song is ultimately pure and positive and beautiful, and there should be something like that out there for people to hear right now. So why not? So then, like after Nancy sang On It With Me and Y and Dina Carter, it became a beautiful thing.
Love is but a song we sing, fear's the way we die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Some will come and some may go, it will surely pass. When the one that left us here returns for us at last, but a moment's sunlight
people now. Smile on your brother, everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Ooh. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother, everybody get together. Try to love one another right now.
Hi, this is Ann Wilson in the studio for my solo album, Hope and Glory.
On War of Man, what's interesting is all of the singers up to this point that you've chosen to do duets with, male or female, I think the one common thread among your choice of people to do duets with is that they're all powerful singers. Elton,
right.
K.D. Lang, Winona, Gretchen Wilson, all of these people could definitely blow out a mic, you know, from 10 feet. And
yeah.
and you're one of those too. And then we get to War of Man. Suddenly now we get your choice to do a duet with somebody who really her hallmark, Alison Krauss, her hallmark is really much more of a almost a gossamer, ethereal, light, airy kind of a approach. At least that's at least that's my perception of her as a singer. Tell me about your choice of War of Man, and then your choice of who to duet with on it.
Well, I think personally that War of Man is possibly the most relevant song on here because it's got it all. It's got the battle scene with the gas and the fumes and the machines and the technology and the desert, and then it's got the sound of the little children looking out the window, looking in, into their fantasy above all this mess. And I've always been a big Neil Young person, and he is relentless. He just will not give it up. He thinks what he thinks, and he does it in real time. And I think that this is amazing poetry here. And the reason I thought of Alison Krauss is that just because someone has a sweet and an angelic voice doesn't mean that they don't sing the paint off the walls. I mean, she is so pure that it just breaks your heart. And so I thought of her for the role of the two little girls in this song for that reason. just so pure and so such in opposition to the way I'm singing in this song, which is, well, you know, it's Bambi and Godzilla. So I think that this works really well. She did a great job on it.
I agree. You chose to sing Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, which he wrote about the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right.
What historic parallels to the times we're in now do you see from that?
Well, I see a whole lot of big guns aimed right down our throats. And I see lots of saber rattling, lots of brinksmanship, all those things that were going on during those few scary days that this song was written about. Only now, I think it's intensified, and the stakes are way high. Of course, they couldn't get much higher than they were then, the end of the world, you know. But I think that we are in no less of a crisis now. And so, yeah, what was I thinking doing a Bob Dylan song, maybe the Bob Dylan song of all time? Well, just that's the power that's available to us to listen to right now and to make us remember ourselves. And so at first, Ben Mink and I were going, wow, this is a big thing to respect, and this is a big, long song full of lots and lots and lots of pertinent lyrics, but it's 6.5-plus minutes long, and, like, let's not blow it. So maybe, Ben says to me, maybe you should go in and try and edit this. And so, you know, you have to process all the ideas, not just the good ones, you know. So I tried 3 times. There isn't an extra word anywhere. There's not an extra comma. There's not even an extra breath. There's no way that you can change anything that Bob Dylan says in that song. And I'm glad that I gave up, because it was a stupid idea to edit. But so we thought of another way, and that was to bring in Rufus Wainwright and Sean Colvin, and just to develop it as sort of like a little play with three actors doing improv together.
That's an interesting approach.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Rufus comes, he's the child of Bob Dylan's whole generation, so it had a little extra coolness to it as far as I'm concerned, because both he and Sean are just such soulful people. And when they sing, you know they mean what they sing. This is authentic, you know. I think it came out well. Although, yeah. What were we thinking trying to do Bob Dylan, you know? It makes you a little bit intimidated in a way. He's so brilliant.
Now, I remember in the first Gulf War, sitting and talking with you and Nancy doing one of these interviews, and you were moved and motivated with Nancy and some other musician friends of yours in the Seattle area to do a thing you called the Love Mongers. And
right.
Here you are doing a solo album, Hope and Glory, with a theme. What role do you feel that music and your music and musicians play in times like we find ourselves in now? What do you think, realistically, what do you think your role should be, can be, with music in times like we find ourselves in now?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because throughout the 80s, and especially the 80s, I think there was a feeling among musicians like, oh, better not say anything, it might hurt my career, just back away from it, pretend like it's not going on, you know. Well, I personally think that artists should be participants, and if that means like holding up a mirror to society, then that's what they should do. And that doesn't mean they think they know it all. It's just they happen to be people who can sing and write words, and they have the ear, possibly, of the culture for a moment. So I guess holding up a mirror is the best thing. And maybe in this case, giving them a couple of songs like Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, or even Get Together, things to listen to make them think and not just kind of fall into a comfortably numb thing, pattern.
There was a time when so many of us, me included, looked to songwriters, musicians like yourself for answers.
Absolutely, yeah.
And over the years, I've seen some of the more responsible ones modify that stance, that pose. And now they're saying maybe the role for music is to pose the questions and not to try to necessarily formulate the answers. Do you agree with that, maybe?
That's a flip-flop, or?
No. Because you alluded to it in your answer. You said,
you're
not necessarily have the answers, that musicians aren't necessarily, you know, qualified or to be you know, world leaders, that the issues are complex, but that certainly no one should say that you're not qualified or don't have a role by at least posing the questions.
Exactly right. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that somebody's got to, and obviously artists and musicians aren't gurus by any stretch. But sometimes they can put words together, if it's by accident or on purpose, that do help and make people think about stuff. I think Bob Dylan's one of them. I think John Lennon was one of them. Oh, I'm sure that Paul Simon is one. Yeah, definitely. Posing questions, that's really a good thing. What better?
Yeah, very good. And what about the when the charge is levied that you're somehow dangerous or unpatriotic by posing the questions?
Oh yeah, that's yeah. What about that? You know.
Yeah. What about
do we not ask questions because the horse is being led in a different direction? I mean, no, I think we have to. I come from a family that was raised to believe that you better ask questions. And if you don't, you are doomed to just to never like knowing anything in the world that'll help you get forward or being able to be a good member of society at all. You're just going to sit there on your fat ass and take and take and take from everyone else. So if someone calls me unpatriotic for asking questions or for doing the song Hard Rain's Gonna Fall or War of Man or something, then they're just wrong. I think I'm the ultimate patriot by caring.
And when they say, you know, no, you don't know your place in society. You're an entertainer. Just shut up. Just shut up and sing your song. Like you know, look what. See, the Dixie Chicks are from my hometown here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and
right.
So I saw I saw it up close and personal. Do you think, Ann, that if the Dixie Chicks had been male, do you think all of that would have gone down the same way, or do you think it had any? Do you think there was a gender component to that controversy at all?
Well, let's see. Do we rip off the lid on this one? Yes, I think we do. yeah, I think there was a gender component, but I don't think it was the only one. I think that there was a red state, blue state thing about it, too, that might have been just as big. You know, but they are the Dixie Chicks, after all, so they're supposed to look cute and not say anything, you know. Well, they didn't. So much for that. So people had to go out and buy their CDs so they could burn them. you know. A little irony there.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd ask. On a brighter note, this summer.
I think that's a bright note, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I just, you know, I had to make a left turn here somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
All right. This summer is the 30th anniversary of Heart's Little Queen. I first met you and Nance on the Little Queen tour in June 1977 after a concert in Springfield, Massachusetts. And here
wow.
we are. Yeah, and here we are still working together on your music. Isn't that amazing?
Hard to believe, you know.
It is hard to believe. I guess we're
but
both.
It's a wonderful thing.
I guess we're both survivors.
Yeah, I guess so. And we're both still talking.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then that very last song that I wrote called Little Problems, Little Lies kind of ties it all together in a real here and now today way. So,
well, tell me, you know what? I didn't get, tell me about that song. We got time. Tell me about that song.
Yeah, well, that song is kind of like the drawstrings to the little bag. It sums the whole thing up, and it's in the voice, again, of a soldier. It doesn't say if it's male or female. Lying on the side of the road in a bombed-out SUV with no more cell phone service. And the life is ebbing away from them, and this is their last thoughts. So it's simple, but it's intense. And I just thought this is my contribution to all these songs of conscience. And here's one last person saying, well, I've been lied to, and here I am, and I have a big problem.
You mentioned something, and it really shows. It really, and I'm not embarrassed to admit it. You said it's through the eyes of a soldier, and then you paused and you said it doesn't say whether it's male or female. And I thought, wow, soldier. I mean, automatically, with my perspective, a soldier is always male to me.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And you just pointed out that in today's American armed forces, that's just no longer true, is it?
It's not true, and it's something that hasn't been touched on much in the news or anything. They sometimes will mention, oh yes, and female soldiers have lost their lives too, but it's really like a secondary thought. I didn't really go for that one issue in this song. This is more the universal soldier that I'm talking about here. But yeah, you're right. It's not just the boys anymore.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. Little Problems, Little Lies. Ann Wilson, Hope and Glory. Thank you, Annie. Well, God bless. And please give my best to Nancy.
I will. And thanks for having me again.
Oh, listen, any time. I always have loved your work ever since The Receiving Line.
That is hilarious. I'll have to tell Nancy that.
It's true. It's a vivid memory that I've carried with me, these 30 years. And it's true. And I wanted to share it with you.